I've been holding my newborn Eliza while watching the news in disbelief over the destruction of Hurricane Harvey. I've been texting my parents and they're okay, but I keep thinking, how are all of these mamas? How are they getting through this? So I started a fundraising page for us, Atomic Moms Unite for Hurricane Harvey. And we're partnering with Save the Children in order to get the important necessities to these displaced families. Things like cribs and diapers and God, even safe spaces and shelters for them to play. So go to crowdrise.com/atomicmoms. Please go to crowdrise.com/atomicmoms and let's make an impact together. Welcome to Atomic Moms, a modern parenting podcast about the joys and complexities of caring for our children and ourselves. I'm Ellie Noss, and each week we celebrate and commiserate with best-selling authors, parenting experts like today, and moms around the world. Also today. Hi, everybody. I want to let you know that I'm so happy to be back from maternity leave. I have my 3.5-week-old Eliza and Sabrina's home from preschool for a few weeks. Our house is a zoo, so I am so grateful that we are calling across the pond today. I am so sleep deprived, and I know that our guest's accent will have a soothing effect on my frayed nerves. I can't see straight, and honestly, I'm not sure if it's my contact or if it's because I didn't get any sleep last night. But enough about me. Our guest today, parenting coach and author Sarah Ockwell-Smith. She is the mother of 4 children whose work and expertise has been featured in BBC News Magazine, WebMD, BuzzFeed, as well as national television and radio. Her new book is on sale August 29th, 2017, which, by the way, is our podcast release date. And it's Gentle Discipline, Using Emotional Connection, Not Punishment, to Raise Confident, Capable Kids. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on Atomic Moms.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So right before we started recording, you mentioned that you're also a little sleepy. Where did you just come back from?
No, we've just come back from holiday in Jamaica, which is, so in the UK, it's quite late at night when we're recording, but I'm still on island time, they call it, in Jamaica. So I have really bad jet lag. So I think the combination of you being sleep deprived and me being jet lagged, I'm not sure we're going to make much sense. But
no, but don't you think it'll be the best?
Possibly. It could be really surreal and not make any sense whatsoever.
So I like the idea of island time. I think I'm just going to say that. Everyone, I'm just on island time. I'm on newborn land island time. So
your own island.
Exactly. I gotta also say that the galley copy of your book, Gentle Discipline, it could not have arrived at the more opportune moment. My 3-year-old was whining and driving my husband absolutely insane, and he was at his wit's end. And I open the package and I pull out the book, and I couldn't help but giggle at the cover because it was like Gentle Discipline. It was like this perfect little like wink and nod from the universe of like, it's okay, Ellie, we've got your back. We can figure this out. So I'd like to start by asking you, how do you define discipline?
Gosh. So I think we have to start off by asking, how do other people define discipline? So most people think discipline is about punishing or shaming or some kind of like bribing or rewarding. So basically, when kids misbehave, discipline is meant to change how they behave, to make them more respectful, to make their behavior more acceptable. And most people think that we do that either by making them feel bad about themselves, by making them regret what they've done, by punishing them, or by motivating them to do better. So say using a sticker chart or giving them a toy or some form of a reward. So that definition of discipline is all about, I guess, changing the child's motivation by making them feel better or making them feel worse. For most people, though, I think discipline is seen as something that's quite stern and quite strict and actually not very nice for either the kid or the parent to do. So the idea of a gentle discipline is actually to completely flip everything on its head and think about what our aim is. So when our kids do something we don't like, our aim is to want to shape them and nurture them into a nicer person to live with, not just now, but maybe in 10 or 20 years' time. When you think about it that way, we have to take a long-term approach. So we have to think about keeping the family happy, keeping everybody safe in the short term. But we've also got to think about the effects of what we do and say when they're a grown adult. So we very quickly realized that actually discipline is all about teaching. We're teaching our children how to behave, what a nice human is, how other people feel, and how they can better themselves. So we have to start from the position really of how do you teach and how do we learn the most? And the really simple way to understand this is kids learn best when they feel good. If they don't feel good, if we shout at them or yell at them, they don't feel good, so they can't learn. And basically, in a nutshell, that is, it's just setting up an environment where they can learn best.
I want to say for a moment, I'm so appreciative of all the real world examples you give in your book. On the podcast over the past couple of years, we've talked a ton about conscious parenting. I'm at this place where for the past 2 years or 3 years, I've really been aware of using gentle discipline. But because I'm so tired, and this is completely irrational, but I'll admit that like there are moments where I'm frustrated because I want to be like, I've used gentle discipline. Like, why can't you be gentle back? Which I guess is not really, isn't gentle. But what advice do you have for us? Like when we feel like we are giving our children, you know, the space to express themselves, to let them know that it's okay to be angry. Feel your feelings. You know, we need to feel that we need to be able to express them in certain ways or you can't do certain things. But I've always been so respectful of feelings. And now I get that it's irrational to expect a three-year-old to like, I don't know, give me, I'm struggling even with the question, I guess, because I know that it doesn't make any sense. But
So your question is basically, if you've been working so hard, why is it not working?
Yeah, like why can't she just be an adult already? That's why I'm having a hard time asking the question, because I know it's not rational.
Yeah,
but I'm sure there's a lot of parents that feel this way, that they're sort of like, I've been so kind to you.
So there are three different answers to your question. The first answer is
non-question question. Okay.
It's a question everybody asks, or I see this so commonly like on internet groups. I've been doing all of this, but my kid's still tantruming, and they're still hitting their brother, they're still cursing, they're still fighting, they're still having, you know, not disrespecting me. It's so common, and people seem to think that once you adapt this more gentle, conscious method that everything's going to be changed in your family and you'll have this perfect child and you'll be, you know, perfect Disney type family. But the thing is, as you've quite rightly said, you have a three-year-old, and a three-year-old cannot at all ever behave in the way that you're wanting her to. So you're working against brain development.
Right.
So you have to understand that a three-year-old has little to no impulse control, no ability to regulate their emotions. They have very low levels of empathy. They just simply can't produce the behavior that you're wanting to see. That's not a downfall for you or for your daughter. That's just the way it is. So the first thing we have to have is realistic expectations. So am I expecting behavior of this child that they are just not capable of? The really key thing to understand is that ultimately this style of parenting, this style of discipline is not quick fix. You're doing it for the long term. And actually, you may not see any tangible results for 15 years. And that's really hard to get your head around when we live in such a quick fix society. You know, we can get anything that's sort of next day loans, 3 day diets, you know, all of these sort of drive through anything. But you have to put so much time and so investment into today and still have a kid shout, hit, whine, kick, bite.
Yeah,
because
it requires
that's what
so
they do
trust
at this age. Yeah, and you know what? And you really may not see any results for 10, 15, even 20 years' time, which is. It's so difficult. You have to keep reminding yourselves of this. I'm not doing this in vain. I'm in this for the long haul. And do you know what now? So my kids are 10, 12, 13 and 15. And I would say I'm only just really starting to reap the rewards of the 15-year-old.
Okay.
That's how long it takes. So that's the first answer, is it's not a quick fix. That doesn't mean to say that you are permissive and let them run riot in the short term. You still have to set boundaries and enforce limits. And there are going to be times when your daughter doesn't like that and she's upset and she cries and you may have to be a bit more stern than you'd like to be. But the whole ethos is focused in what will happen in, 2030. Not 2017.
That's great.
So that's the first answer, is the fact that she can't behave like you want her to because she's three.
I'm going to put a post-it note on the fridge that says 2030.
You know, think of 2030, yeah. You know, and it's, I was writing an article yesterday, and you're going to laugh at me because of the way I pronounce this word, talking about if we were planting seeds and we were growing a tomato plant, which I think you say tomato.
I love
or something.
It. No, tomato. So, I had a British boyfriend. I loved the way he said yogurt.
Potato, tomato. So we're growing tomato seeds and you've just planted them today. Tomorrow morning, you would not wake up and be angry that they weren't fully grown and bearing fruit. And that's exactly what happens when you've spent, you know, all day being gentle with the seeds or with your daughter. You don't expect to see results that quickly from anything else that's like a natural living being. But right. We do for our kids. So that's the first answer, the expectations, the fact that it's long term, not short term. Two other answers to your question that I'll try and do really quickly. We, particularly mothers, and I don't mean to sound sexist when I say that, but I do think that it seems to be a trend more amongst mums and dads, is we tend to be too quick to blame ourselves and feel guilty. Yep. So if things aren't working, we tend to be quite introspective and say, well, I'm not cut out for this. I'm not naturally calm. I'm not this earth mother. You know, there are some mums who can do this and it comes naturally and they're calm. And I just can't do that. It's me. It's my fault. That's why I can't do it. Or I'm too busy. Or this only works if you've only got one child or if you don't work. That sort of self-defeatist attitude and behavior, that's sort of attacking ourselves, is perhaps one of our biggest downfalls. In the book, I talk about a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. So for the parents who say, this isn't for me, it's not working, that's an example of what we would say a fixed mindset, a belief that is very fixed and unhelpful and very pessimistic. We have to change that internal narrative to say, do you know what? Today, I haven't been great, but I know that. That's the first step. And tomorrow, I'm really going to put more effort in and change. And maybe I won't succeed tomorrow. Maybe I'll succeed in 6 months' time. But I know I can do this if I really keep trying. To do that gets you on to my last point of point three of your answers, in the fact that in order to be able to do that, we have to look after ourselves. The kind of dreaded self-care words that most parents kind of groan when I say.
No, it's really important. And I know
it's a cliche. And the amount of people say, you know, I don't have time for that. I don't have the money for that. And I don't have the time for that. So then my answer is always the same. If you don't have time for self-care, you will have to make time to deal with a difficult behavior of your kids that results.
Oh, that's so good.
So either way, you have to spend the time. Do you want to spend it looking after yourself? Or do you want to spend it dealing with the behavior of your child that results because your lack of self-care has built up all these limiting beliefs? Mm-hmm. We get angry, we get stressed. When we get exhausted, we get tired. As you said, you step into authoritarian or permissive parenting.
Yep.
The key ultimately in all of this, going back to my answer to your first question, is to be a good teacher. And good teachers need to take care of themselves. They realize when they're hitting burnout, they realize when they need a break, and they keep on learning. They're not hard on themselves if they have a day that's difficult. They think, you know, what went wrong? What can I change? So it doesn't have to be self-care, like go out and do a spa day or do a yoga class. It could be just, I don't know, five. For me, even something as simple as going and having a bath and shutting the door so I didn't have kids throwing plastic things in with me, or trying to go to the toilet alone, like something really basic.
Yes. And you're a mother of four. So if you can fit it in, we can grab it too. Yeah.
And you know what? When I run workshops, bearing in mind, I have lots of, I guess, people who... dads who don't really want to be in the workshop. So I have to try and make it quite funny. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about self-care, I ask people to give me lots of examples of ways that they do that. So that could be, you know, I go to the pub, I go for a run, I go for a walk, I phone a friend, whatever. And I always say, who thinks they don't have time for self-care? And lots of people put their hands up. So my next question is, how many of you have a poo every day? Most people put their hands up. It's a little bit of a personal question. And I say, right, if you have time to have a poo,
Yeah.
Do you know what? Yeah. If they don't, that's a whole other issue. But
they need a different workshop. No, I'm kidding.
If you have a poo, and especially if you can have a poo without a child in with you, then you have time for self-care. The simplest and easiest way is to take your phone, download a meditation mindfulness app, sit on the loo, poo, and do the mindfulness app. It takes 5 or 10 minutes a day, probably coincides with your poo length. You're not doing much else when you're on the loo. Most people take their phones in with them and browse Facebook. You know, go and do the mindfulness app. It will make such a difference. It sounds so silly. Something just that simple, multitasking, also really helps if you're constipated as well, because it relaxes everything. So, you know,
you start breathing again. Yeah. No,
and saying
that's
great. It kind of makes you remember. Saying something so silly, like, why is she talking about poos and, you know, body movements? But take your phone as the loo, download an app, listen to it, do some deep breathing meditation, and that will do you. That's really all you need to do.
And also, self-care is that basic. Like, we,
it's that basic. We having a bath with a door shut.
Yeah, it is. It is so important. Last night, I took our newborn Eliza for a walk. It was just a 10-minute walk around the block, and I was a different person when I came back in the house. And it's so crazy how we can reset for ourselves and recharge in those little moments. And then, yes, when I'm with my 3.5-year-old and she's climbing all over me while I'm trying to nurse, I'm so much more gentle with her.
I was going to say, sometimes you have to do an emergency self-care, which is something quite big. So my Achilles heel is I yell when I'm really stressed and angry. When I find myself being shouty, yelly mum, I know I have to do something. So for me, my emergency self-care is to go out for the day with some girlfriends and go to a spa. You know, that's just what personally I do, but it has to be a day long and I have to be away from them for a day. So I think it's, you know, being aware of, okay, right, am I really in the end of my tether? Do I need to do something quite big? So it doesn't have to be big financially. It just needs to be something that fills you up or empties you more than sitting on the loo and listening to your meditation or going for a walk. So something bigger.
So talk to us about the why, how, what method.
Yeah, so I think all of this sort of really what underpins gentle discipline is you're working as a team with the kid. But most importantly, we think about why they're behaving in the way we do. Most discipline looks at kids as if they're naughty or manipulative or devious. And it's all about how can we stop them from being this difficult, disrespectful child. It's really rare that any of the methods that are using mainstream discipline, things like naughty steps, timeout, none of them really pause and think, you know, why is the kid doing this? Obviously, it's a little bit like if you've hurt yourself and you have a wound that's infected, say on your arm, you could get a big, what do you call them, plasters or elastoplast or something? Do you know what I'm talking
about? A cast, yes.
So if you've got a wound on your arm and you cover it up, you bandage it up or whatever, so you don't see it. You've covered it up, you've dealt with it. That's mainstream discipline. Gentle discipline thinks, well, hang on a minute, whilst you've covered that up, that could be getting infected underneath. We need to actually look at what's happening there and deal with the actual wound, not just mask it. So we have to think about why are they behaving in this way? How are they feeling? What's driving it? Because in most cases, if you deal with that, there's no need to do anything. So, you know, for instance, as you were saying, I don't know if you're experiencing difficulties with your daughter, not just actually when a baby arrives afterwards, but quite often the behavior starts a few weeks beforehand. So if she did say behave in a way that you're not happy with, you have to think, why is she doing this? The answer really simply for the situation you're in now is probably she's needing more attention one-on-one. How is she feeling? And the answer almost always to that is not very good, whatever the situation is, whether it's fighting with a sibling, whether it's troubles at school, whether it's fighting with parents, whether it's a toddler biting a new sibling. The answer is almost always, do you know what? They're not feeling good. They're not doing this because they enjoy it. They're feeling really uncomfortable. So why are they doing it? How are they feeling? And what do you hope to achieve from disciplining? It's really simple. So if you're ever struggling to think, well, I've got to do something about this, those three questions can really guide you into what you do as a result. So if a child's feeling disconnected, if they're feeling really sad and even a bit of grief at the relationship they've lost, the answer is, well, actually, I want to repair that. I don't want to make that feel worse by excluding them more, by putting them in their room or putting them in time out. The answer is actually to spend a bit more time.
So last night we were down in the playroom and I let my daughter watch an episode of the show called Octonauts that she's obsessed with. And she knew she could only watch one. And so then when it was over, I turned it off. And then she threw a fit and I was nursing our newborn and my daughter started kicking me, which when we turn off, when we shut down screen time, like that's always when she has this big meltdown. And so she was kicking at me and I would say, Sabrina, I'm not going to let you kick me. And then she'd kick me again and I'm with the baby. And I'd say, this is unsafe for the baby. I know you're disappointed that the show is over. You know, what else can we do? Would you like to, we can draw together, we can make a poster for your grandparents that are coming tomorrow, we can, and I gave other options and she continue to kick me and say, I want this, more of this show. At that point, my husband came downstairs, and I know in my heart that she's kicking me. Well, she's disappointed that she can't watch her show, and I'm sure she's frustrated that I have a baby in my arms. They were able to go upstairs and read books together, and that was the solution. But it's almost like she has to go through that fight or fight sort of physical aggression before she can even balance out enough to be like, yeah, okay, I'll go read books with daddy, which is what she wanted. She wanted connection with one of us. And so that worked out. But I guess my question is, if daddy wasn't there to read with her, what should have been my next step with the two kids?
So why is she doing it?
She's
I don't know. Was it in the evening?
Yes.
So TV, actually, for a toddler or preschooler watching TV like that, is sometimes a way for them to unwind if they're feeling really tired. So it may be that she was using that as a way to kind of chill out in the evening because she was tired. It's also, you know, she's really into a show. It's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever binge watched on Netflix or something.
Exactly.
Like, you've had a show that you really like and you're really into it. You don't want to turn it off. You know, we can all understand how that feels when you're engrossed in something. TV is really addictive for little kids, even more so than us. They have zero impulse control. So her reaction to that, regardless of your situation, is completely normal. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like you're watching your best show, you're binge watching, and somebody says, right, no more.
Yep.
So taking it back a step, it may be that she needed a way to calm down without the TV, or perhaps that show could have come slightly earlier.
It would be like
earlier.
If I ripped my husband's iPad out of his hands in the middle of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and also he'd had a really tough day at work. He was really exhausted, and it was, you know, it was like, oh, I've come home, I'm watching this, I can relax now, and it's my favorite thing to watch.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's a little bit more than just
that.
Yeah. So, you know, empathizing is really important. Maybe something as simple as moving it a little bit forward in the evening so she's not quite so tired. Having some more visual cues. Like, toddlers and preschoolers don't really get time. We could say, oh, well, when this is finished, it's time to go to bed. But they don't have something called hypothetical thought. Mm-hmm. So they find it really difficult to think about what will happen in the future. They're very much in the here and now, things they can touch and see now. So warning her that one show and that's it is pretty meaningless, to be honest.
Okay.
So having something that she can see and touch more is more helpful. So it could be, for instance, you have, I don't know, a really big sand timer, or you set a countdown on an iPad that coincides with the program finishing so that she can see that it's coming. It's a bit more meaningful than suddenly it's finished.
But what about, like, there's a song that, it's like creature report. It's, like, it's the last like 3 minutes of the show. There is like, there are these symbols that say that it's winding down.
Okay. So then I would keep pointing out to you, you know, this is coming up to the end. You don't forget that we're going to go
Got
up.
It.
So it's like almost constantly at that point, like every 30 seconds or so.
That's very helpful. And also the sand timer is a great idea, because I also have so many friends where, you know, you let your child watch one little 3 minute YouTube video where they're doing like the Play-Doh things, and then they freak out when you take it away, because that has no sort of demarcation that it's ending. So
but
that's
screens
such a great...
have their very own way of dealing with them because they're so addictive. You know, whether we're talking 3 or 30.
I know. They're terrible. I get that we shouldn't do it, but yeah.
I don't think that you shouldn't do it. I think, you know, generally sometimes we need to use it, particularly if you've got another baby. We all need time out. Sometimes it's like, you know, have the screen for half an hour, and then I can have a break.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes think, well, if the screen causes issues because it's the run up to bedtime, maybe we should put screens in the morning.
Gotcha.
So I always talk about, actually, sometimes think of it as stepping out of the situation and using your adult brain. Rather than finding a solution, maybe the solution is you just move that away from bedtime, rather than dealing with it when it happens at bedtime.
Right.
But if and when it does happen at bedtime, you were lucky that you had dad there to help out. If you didn't have dad there, then the paramount thing you think of is safety.
Yeah.
So I use an acronym called SENSE in the book. So S-E-N-S-E. And I call it making sense of tantrums. And this is very much to use in a short-term situation. So the first S stands for safety. Safety matters more than anything. There's no point disciplining if somebody is at risk. And the instance you gave me, your baby was at risk. So what you have to think about there is to, or if it was you that was being kicked, you've got to stop the kicking or the hitting. So whether she was hitting the baby, kicking you, you have to stop that. So you need to move away from her slightly and just say very firmly, I will not let you kick me, or I will not let you hit the baby.
Mm-hmm.
If she doesn't stop it, then you may have to firmly but gently restrain her leg or something.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen there is she's then going to meltdown with all these big feelings. Like, yeah. She's really upset. She can't control her impulses. She's got all of these big emotions, and you're telling her to stop something. So she's not feeling good at all at that moment. So the next letter in the acronym is E, which stands for empathize, which I think we've been talking about all along. What, you know, she's feeling really bad about this. I don't want to be angry at her. She's tired. She's got a new sibling. She wanted to watch more of her show. I know what my husband would be like if he was watching Game of Thrones. I get it. I'm not going to be angry, Mom. I'm going to stay on her side. Yeah.
So the that's beautiful too. Stay on her side.
Yeah. So the next letter is N, which means to name her feelings. So I'd say to you, sweetheart, I know you're really angry. You really wanted to watch the next Octonauts episode. So by saying that, yeah. It shows her that, you know, I get it. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
The really important thing is that you can't say that while she's in fight or flight mode. When she's full of cortisol and angry, there's no point talking to her.
Okay.
Because she literally won't hear you. She can't compute anything. So you have to let her feel those emotions. You have to make sure she's safe and that she's not going to hurt herself or break something or hurt anybody else. And you need to let her to calm down a little bit before you start talking to her, because only then is she going to hear you. Then you move on to the next S in the letter sense, which is support. So here, lots of people think this means when you're gentle, the way that you support a toddler having a tantrum is to give them a hug. I don't know about you, but when my daughter was three, if I tried to give her a hug, she probably would have hit me at that point.
Yeah. Some kids, say, I need my space.
Yeah, okay, says. So respect that. Give her a space. Yeah. Some kids will be like, yeah, I do want a hug. And like my daughter would have said, and lashed out at me. So the support there is, okay, I can see you need your space. I'm going to sit just here. When you're ready, let me know. I'd love to help you calm down.
Oh, that's so good. Wait, I want to say it again so that I can remember it. When you're ready, I want to help you calm. Wait, what is it? When you're ready, I'm here to help you calm down.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. I'm here when you need me. But I can see that you want your space, so I'll just be here.
Oh, if I could only say it in your accent, then I feel like I'd really be able to sell it. Because it sounds so sweet.
The last E is exchange, which is a little bit like sort of you're exchanging one difficult feeling to do something more positive. So it's almost like distracting. But the really important thing is this is coming right at the very end. So if you distracted her right at the beginning, you'd have lost all this wonderful teaching opportunity. You would have not let her express her feelings. So at this point, the distraction may be, the exchange may be, how about we pick out a book and I read you a book?
Yeah.
How about we play this for a couple of minutes?
But you're right. I did that, but I did it too early because she wasn't ready to hear it yet.
Exactly. So you've got to let her calm down. It's a bit like if you're feeling really, really bad, you're in a cafe with a friend, you're sobbing, you're angry, you're fuming, you get all of the feelings out, you feel a bit spent, a bit exhausted. But at that point, your friend says, hey, I could do with some chocolate cake. Do you want some? And at that point, you think, yeah, do you know what? I feel good. I've got all of this out. Chocolate cake would be good here. But if she'd said, let's have some chocolate cake, the minute you started to cry, you wouldn't have been able to get those feelings out.
No.
So it's a bit, hold the chocolate cake for the end. Do everything else first. But the really key thing comes back to the very first thing you said to me. You're not going to stop these tantrums. Do you know, you still got 20-year-olds having a tantrum because they want to watch their favorite show on TV.
Yeah.
You have to understand that it's normal. She's not doing it to wind you up. She wanted to watch it. She's probably got a bit of upset about her new sibling. She's probably tired. She probably feels out of control at that time. She's not behaving badly. She's behaving like a 3-year-old.
Yes.
Your primary aim is to keep her, yourself, and your baby safe, and then help her to feel her emotions in a safe way, support her afterwards, but make it very clear with those clear boundaries. I will not let you hurt me. I will not let you hurt the baby. I will not let you break something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what separates it from being permissive, basically.
That's so helpful. I've got to ask you about empathy because, you know, I'm thinking of Daniel Tiger and everyone is trying to teach their children empathy. And I am realizing that at this age, she's almost four, like it's still not there for her. And I think that's totally normal. But when we do a play date, I'll give you an example. Last week, my girlfriend Jessica came over with her daughter and their buddies, and they're the same age, and they were playing house. And my daughter decided she wanted to play mom, and her little girlfriend also wanted to play mom. And my daughter said, no, I'm the mom. Be something else. And Jessica and I said, well, you know, everyone can choose who they want to be. You can both be moms. And my daughter was not interested in that. And so then she said, well, then I'm not going to play. And this is something that keeps coming up, that she'll decide, well, and I'm not going to play with you. And yeah. Then she'll say, I want space. And especially with a play date, it's so awkward because the other child will want to play or do something else. Or, you know, they're coming to her with this eagerness, and she will just be like, no, I'm not going to play with you. Or I want my space. And then she'll kind of like wander around like she's like in a sad moment in a Disney film. So I'm not really sure what to do there, because she hurts other children's feelings when she does that. But at the same time, I respect that, like, if she doesn't want to play, she doesn't want to play. What would you do in those instances?
So she does have some empathy at this age. Everything starts to develop from birth. She'll have more empathy than she had when she was two. She learns empathy from you. You don't have to teach children empathy. There's no specific lesson. They learn it by us role modeling. So a great way to teach her empathy in that situation is to show her that you empathize with how she's feeling. Mm-hmm. Playdates are really tricky. I always say playdates aren't for the kids, they're for the mums.
Right. I agree.
Kids, don't
I love them.
Really
no, because it's for my girlfriend. And
I think as mums, we need them, but kids often don't. They don't need to socialize with their peers at that age. They learn all the socialization they need from us.
This is also happening a lot on the playground at school.
But if your kid really likes to socialize, that's great. Do it. If they struggle with it, then perhaps the easiest thing, do you remember previously I said, think outside, use your adult brain? Yeah. Sometimes the easiest answer is to think, right, she's struggling with playdates at the moment. I'm going to pause them for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. Or we'll meet somewhere, sort of a neutral ground, like we'll go to a park or something, mm-hmm. where there can be no fighting about games like this.
Right.
But sometimes I think having a break, or at that point, it might be that she's trying to say to her, actually, do you know, mum, this isn't really about me being the mum. This is more about me feeling done socializing today. So it could be
that's
time
it.
To go home.
Yep.
Maybe she's introverted, which is, you know, I'm a massive introvert. I like to socialize, but sometimes I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm done with people for today.
Yes.
And I need to go. And I think that can be really hard, particularly if you're quite extroverted as a mum and you've got an introverted kid and there's that mismatch between, oh, but it's lovely, you're having fun, I'm having fun, your friend's here. And the child's behaviour is very clearly saying to you, I can't actually deal with this anymore today.
That's a great point. I've been thinking about it because it also feels like if she came up to me and cuddled in my lap and said, I'm feeling shy or something, then everyone would feel super,
yeah, and she may
that
be
would
able
feel
to
acceptable
that,
because then it's not trying to hurt someone's feelings. The problem is it's not a problem, but the way she presents it is that she is the alpha. And so then
she presents it like that because she's three. What you're hoping her to do is what a 10-year-old would do.
Right. And so, but I think that, so then it suddenly becomes that she's the one who is hurting this other child's feelings, when really she's really saying, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I'm just saying it in a way that makes me sound authoritative or not nice and sort of like a mean girl.
And I think it comes down to the relationship you have with the other mom. So if like she's a friend, I'd just say to her, you know, I'm really sorry. I hope that she's not upset, your little girl. I'd go and I'd play with the little girl for a bit. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I'll be mum. I'll be the dad and you can be the mum or something.
That's
it's more
idea.
About the relationship the two adults have.
Yeah.
And I perhaps discuss that when the children weren't there and just say, look, I hope you're okay with this. She's going through this at the moment. But, you know, if it gets too much, please tell us to go home.
That I will definitely keep in mind.
But do you know what? The most important thing to take away from this is your daughter is showing some really remarkably mature skills as well by saying, no, I don't want to do this. If she was 25 and saying that, we'd be saying how fantastic that she's such an assertive young woman. But we hate assertiveness when they're young, especially actually assertiveness in women of whether they're 3 or 30 is not seen as a positive thing. But how fantastic that she's saying, no, I don't want to do that.
I agree. It is so fantastic. I mean, from the beginning, like she would be 2 years old on the playground and, you know, a boy would snatch something from her and she'd snatch it back and be like, yeah, sister, like lean in. Like this is, I went to a women's college, like I'm all about this. She also very much likes to be in control of the play situations and she's a leader and.
But we call them bossy or mean girls.
Right.
But
no, she's a leader, but she will.
She's a leader, which is great.
She is. But there are moments when someone else will want to play with her and whoever she's playing with, and she'll say no. Or a week ago, she has a girlfriend at school that she really enjoys playing with, and she was holding her hand, and another classmate came up and wanted to hold my daughter's hand as well, and my daughter wouldn't hold her hand. And I guess that became this whole thing where the classmate's feelings were hurt, and then you know, obviously the part of me
but
that
it's
is
her hand if you don't want
hand.
Something to touch part of your body.
Exactly.
You know, of course you should have autonomy.
Exactly.
And she'll understand the intricacies of it when she's older, when she has more empathy, more understanding of how others feel and social rules. But right now she's 3.
So what should I say to the, if this comes up with like a preschool teacher, or do I
have a conversation with them and just say, you know, when she is a kind of a natural leader, she's naturally assertive, and I don't want to take that away from her. I think that's a great trait, but I appreciate, you know, I don't want her to upset other people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, but please understand she is only 3.
Yeah.
If the teacher's there and you're not, I'd have a word with the teacher. You know, by all means, do say something to her. Try to help her to see how the other person's feeling. But yeah. I wouldn't want it to be considered a problem.
Okay.
In the same way that I'd be having a chat with your friend that mm-hmm. you had the play date with and apologising. Just like, I hope you don't mind. This is why I don't really want to do anything about it. But I do really want to make sure that your daughter's not upset. Do let me know if you want to have a break from play dates with the kids, therefore, or maybe the two of us could go out without
right.
the kids or something.
Yep. Yep.
So it's more about you kind of protecting your adult relationships, but also in the book I talk about being a champion for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
So when they get embarrassing in social situations, it's really important to stand up for them sometimes, and that might make you embarrassed to do so. But far too often in our society, when our kids do something we're embarrassed about, we try to change the kids because we're embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes it's about being a champion for them, standing up and taking a hit the embarrassment by saying, actually, do you know what? This is for my kid. And I feel uncomfortable acting like this or saying this, but I have my kid's best interest in heart.
Yeah. And I'm going to.
So it's not disciplining because you're worried about what the other person thinks about you.
Right. Because it's this concern of, well, and also a genuine concern that you don't want to, your child to hurt other children's feelings, and you
yeah.
want to teach them empathy. So that's where I struggle.
But you're teaching them empathy by being empathic with them.
Yeah.
It has to always start by role modeling.
Yep.
You can't have today we're going to sit down for half an hour and have a lesson on empathy. It doesn't work like
no.
that. They learn from who you are. They learn from how people treat them.
I know, but me and Sarah, we treat her that this goes back to my first question, non-question is.
And she's 3, you know, so the life of a 3-year-old is incredibly egocentric. Her world revolves around her.
Right.
Her feelings revolve around her. That's not a flaw of her. That's just what
no.
happens when you're 3. And you can't and don't understand all the intricacies of how other people feel and how your actions make them feel. That's something generally we wouldn't expect to happen well until you're 11 plus.
Right.
But actually even teenagers struggle with empathy. There's actually a theory that teenagers have a dip in empathy, so they get a bit better about the age of 10 or 11, but
oh,
when they hit
God.
About 13, 14, they start to get less empathic.
That makes
particularly
so much sense.
Teenage girls, actually. Teenage
yeah.
girls tend to be less empathic than boys.
Oh.
And that slight dip in empathy is really important because that helps them to focus on themselves again and about who they are at that important crossroad between childhood and adolescence and adulthood.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to look at that.
And they have to focus on themselves and think about who they are and what they want to be in their place in the world. So again, it doesn't mean that teenagers are horrible or we've done a bad job if they're, you might call them selfish, or you don't think about anybody else, all you do is think about yourself. But that is exactly what they're doing because that's what they need to do. And again, that doesn't mean that all the work you put in when they were two or three was in vain. That just means they're a teenager with a brain that's fine tuning and you're not going to see the outcome of it. Normally that fades by about 18. 18 is when they really start being nice again.
Well, I can't wait till I have so much to look forward to until we get to 2030. I have so much to look forward to.
You have to stop her from physically hurting people. Yes. If she's really upsetting them, I would leave the situation. I'd say, sweetheart,
of course,
we're all struggling a bit today. Let's go home.
That's a great way to phrase it,
safety,
too.
Safety of physical safety, emotional safety. But
have her back, stay on her side.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when it's really hard, that's the night you need to get home and do some self-care.
Yes.
And remind yourself, this is not a failing. All this work I've put in hasn't been worthless. I'm just not going to see it yet.
And I want to say for our listeners, when you get this book, one of the things I really appreciate about it is you also talk about how we can express ourselves to our own parents and to other people that might be wondering, like, well, why aren't you just laying down the law? Or why aren't you parenting the way I parented you? There are so many helpful tips in this book, not only about, you know, sibling rivalry and whining and anger and, you know, the way that self-esteem plays into your child's behavior. You've got these fantastic lists of like the physiological behavior triggers that we can look out for, like when she's had preschool all day and she's tired and then she has a friend come over, like I kind of might be setting her up for too much in one day. I want to say, take a quick moment to just say, Sabrina, if you do listen to this episode someday, I want you to know that I am so proud of you and what a strong little girl you are. And I love watching you go after what you want. And you have been so gentle and kind to your baby sister and so helpful to me. And I appreciate that you are the leader you are. Okay.
Just not quite yet. Maybe in 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. We get it. You're a little CEO. And that, you know, it's so funny. Even at age one, the last day of our mommy and me group, the teacher asked us all to write down two words that describe our child. And even at the age one, my two words for her were giggle boss. And it's that's it. And that's, you know, and it's a privilege to be able to share my life with her and all the lessons she gives me. Because listen, I'm coming at this as like a, you know, someone who struggles with codependency and always wants people to feel good. And so it's so funny to watch her teach me that, you know, sometimes I don't want to play anymore. And it's not my problem.
We have to come at this of not trying to be perfect, to realize actually I'm trying to teach my kid, but I'm also teaching myself and I'm learning as much as they're learning. And when you learn, you mess up, you don't get things right, but that's all right. It's all right to make mistakes. It's all right to slip up. It's all right to have bad days. It's all right to yell. It's all right to do something wrong, as long as you realize you're learning and keep trying.
Oh, so good. Okay, everybody. Pick up gentle discipline using emotional connection, not punishment, to raise confident, capable kids. Thank you so much for coming on, Sarah, for fitting us in after your island excursion and for making sense of my sleep deprivation. This has been incredibly helpful for me, and I know it will be for so many listeners. Everybody, please check out Sarah's other work also. What is your website, Sarah?
My personal website is just sarahockwell-smith.com. So I blog on there, but I also have a gentleparentinginternational.com website.
And Sarah, if we want to follow you on social media, what are your handles?
Oh, gosh, that's asking, isn't it? Facebook. No, I do know. Facebook is Sarah Ockwell Smith Author, all one word. Instagram is Sarah Ockwell Smith, no hyphen, just all one word. And Twitter is The Baby Expert.
I really appreciate your helping me with these real life scenarios. And throughout the book, that is the coolest thing ever. You've got all of these parenting questions for parents that are, you know, they send you these questions while they're in the trenches and you've got these fantastic responses. And thank you so much for letting me be a guinea pig today and for helping guide me through what's happening in the moment at our household.
You're welcome.
Listeners, also reach out to us on social media at Atomic Moms on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I've really been enjoying our conversations on Instagram. Until next week, everyone, trust in your goodness, live out your greatness, rock on, Atomic Moms.